Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Close Up Talk Radio, the unique internet broadcast series that brings you together with some of the most amazing, important, and interesting individuals from the worlds of business, industry, travel, art, and entertainment. From company owners, CEOs, and presidents, to the technical wizards behind the scenes who create the magic that make their company's products and services so special. Here is your opportunity to hear firsthand the fascinating stories of how it all happened from those who actually made it possible. This is Close Up Talk Radio.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to another session of Close Up Talk Radio. I'm Doug Llewellyn. It's a pleasure to have you back with us. And we're very pleased to have Dr. Howard Mielke back with us. He is with the Department of Pharmacology at Tulane University School of Medicine in New Orleans. And let me tell you a little bit about Dr. Mielke. He's a fascinating gentleman. He is, as I say, from the Tulane University School of Medicine and an internationally recognized research scientist and expert in the health dangers that are posed to children from their exposure to lead. He's among the very first researchers to identify soil lead as a serious public health threat. And the doctor's work on accumulated environmental sources of lead and its association with childhood lead poisoning in inner city environments is considered to be pioneering research. He was among those in the forefront in the successful effort to remove lead from gasoline, one of the reasons you have unleaded gasoline today that you put in your car. Today, Dr. Mielke's main work has been overseeing efforts to decontaminate play areas and child care centers throughout the city of New Orleans. And inspired by this work, the Norwegian government recently set precedents for clean soil programs there in Norway. So, it's a pleasure to have back with us our guest, Dr. Mielke. We spent time with him on the telephone last week. It's a pleasure to have him back today. And you know something, Dr. Mielke, I'm really curious. What was it that first inspired your interest in lead exposure? You remember?
Oh, yes. I got interested in the whole issue of lead because of the emphasis was on lead-based paint, and we started realizing there were some other problems taking place within interiors of cities, especially Baltimore, Maryland, where brick buildings are the common type of building and not paint, and yet we were seeing very high lead levels within the interior of the city and not in the exterior areas of the city, where there were mainly painted buildings. I was particularly spurred by some work that was done by a geochemist who was doing research in glacial fields in Greenland, and he noticed a very large increase in the amount of aerosol, lead aerosols, showing up starting in about the 30s, 40s, especially 50s, even greater, into the 60s and 70s. His name was Claire Patterson, and from his work he started realizing that probably the older urban areas of the United States have been rendered more or less uninhabitable by the millions of tons of lead that accumulated in the cities. And that became a focal point. Is it possible that that actually happened to our cities or not? And that's what spurred my particularly the research interest.
And when was that? I mean, how long ago was that?
Well, the statement that was made from Claire Patterson is the name of the geochemist.
Yeah.
And that was in the National Academy of Sciences in 1980. So, you know, we're talking about three decades ago. And there was also an enormous interest in just what levels of lead were causing problems to children. They started realizing that the lead exposures that children had were much too high. And the efforts then to bring down the lead exposure started to take place, but it wasn't until we took lead out of gasoline that we really succeeded in getting a very rapid reduction in blood lead.
You know, I'm trying to recall when that was. It seems to me we've always had unleaded gas that you buy, but I know that's not true.
The initial unleaded gasoline was put onto the market because of the change to catalytic converters in the automobile. And that was done in order to reduce the amount of hydrocarbons going into the atmosphere and carbon monoxide. There were a couple of things that were, toxic substances that were being emitted from the automobile. And so the initial reason for taking lead out of gasoline was to prevent the poisoning of the catalytic converter so that they would they wouldn't get plugged up. Unleaded gasoline.
You remember when that was?
About 1973.
73. Okay. All right. It's beginning to come back now, you know.
Yeah, I know. And we have short memories about some of these things, unless you're working in it.
Yeah, that's true. So tell me something. How does lead accumulate? We know it does. And we talked at length last week about, you know, lead in the ground and playground areas in New Orleans, which you're working so diligently on. But basically, how does lead accumulate, especially if it's not in gasoline anymore?
Well, it accumulated in the cities as a result of, you know, several different sources that were anything that is turned into a dust, lead dust, will fall off onto the soils. And if there's open soil, then lead is accumulating in that open soil, and it becomes a very stable substance within the soil. And the stability can be demonstrated just by doing surveys across the city. You can find the high lead areas of the city, usually near where there were either busy roads in the past or continue to be busy roads. The high lead areas are always towards the interior of the city and then much less in the outer parts of the city. Death sources do fall to the ground and they become incorporated into the soil on the surface layer of the soil and then it remains there.
But even today, where does it come from?
Well, today there is a movement of lead from formerly contaminated or areas that have been contaminated when the winds blow and during drier periods of time, that lead dust gets re-entrained into the air and continues to move around. And so it isn't stable. It's a dust that readily moves depending on the weather, depending on conditions of the atmosphere. And so, unfortunately, it's very stable in the environment. And until something is done deliberately to remove the lead from the environment or to deal with it, to prevent it from being on the surface, then it remains as a hazard on the surface.
Wow. So it moves from spot to spot, and that's really how it's showing up in new places all the time then, I guess.
Right, it does, and it shows up inside. For example, one of the things that EPA is always saying, you've got to remove your shoes at the door. I don't know how many people do that. We've done it in my household ever since, you know, from the beginning. But it's on the bottoms of the shoes that the lead becomes loosely attached, and when you go inside, it wipes off on the carpet or on the floor as you move in. So that's called track-in. And
right.
So there's a process of lead moving from outside to inside. So removing your shoes at the door will at least prevent the lead from coming from outside. But unfortunately, we still send children outside to play in environments that are very heavily contaminated. And unless something's been done about that, it remains a very severe hazard.
Well, that's pretty fascinating when you talk about that. You know, I do know people whose homes you go into and they request that you leave your shoes outside. I'm not sure if the lead issue is the reason. There may be other reasons for it, but from your perspective, it makes pretty good sense. Can that be harmful in your house?
Removing the shoes is a very good idea. Track-in is a very strong way of moving lead from outside and other toxins from the outside into the inside.
Right.
We noticed, for example, when we do the intervention on the soil, bring in clean soil from outside the city, on those properties, when we do measurement on the interior of the house, the amount of lead dust that's being tracked into the house drops very rapidly. So changing the environment outside will also change the environment on the inside of the house.
Boy, oh boy. You know, I just want to mention something. In case anybody has a question for you, I'm going to give a phone number out. We'll allow some folks to ask you questions if they're interested in it. The area code is 347-996-3389. I'll give the number again, 347-996-3389. And we'll let you ask some questions to Dr. Howard Mielke if you're interested. Let me ask you about how you go about preventing something that is so harmful yet so small and really almost invisible. What do you do?
Well, our approach to the problem, first of all, we've mapped the city of New Orleans. I've mapped several cities in the country right now. And using those maps as a guideline, we bring in clean soil from the outside of the city, and we actually, on very sensitive properties, we put on a layer of what is called geotextile. It's a material that is allows water to go through it, but doesn't allow the soil to come back up to the surface of the soil. And so putting geotextile down and then clean soil on top of the geotextile is one way in which we have an intervention. And the clean soil that we're using contains around 5 parts per million lead. The soil that we're seeing in the city is often 500 to 1,000 parts per million lead. So we can make a dramatic difference in just a couple of hours. And anybody could be doing this. It's not rocket science. It's just a way to provide cleaner play areas. And there are many ways that can be done. Some people have used tartan turf or you know, the artificial turf to put on the soil.
Right.
That helps. It settles down the contaminated soil, and then as it rains, it generally washes off. There are just re-landscaping projects often make a big difference in the property. So this is not rocket science. It's simply a matter of trying to provide very clean areas for children to be playing in.
Well, what is your biggest challenge been in trying to raise public awareness about this? You know, and I know you've been doing this diligently. What has been your biggest challenge?
Well, part of it is certainly the constituents would be the children. And they do not raise their voices. They do not, you know, put their funds towards politicians that will support them as a constituency. Three-year-old children just don't have the ability. They're not really part of our decision-making. So it's parents that have to be paying attention to this. It's an adult problem, really. And in order to work at the level that we need to be working at, we have to find ways to open up some new streams of funding. California has done that by there's a small tax on gasoline, and it provides funding to do their childhood lead poisoning prevention program. And it's it turns out that very small amounts of money. They're charging right now a tenth of a cent per gallon, and that's sufficient to run a program. I don't think anybody would notice 5 cents a gallon in this age. That would provide a good funding stream that you could start systematically changing play areas, such as playgrounds, elementary school playgrounds, and certainly child care centers, and begin to work towards improving the environment.
Very interesting. Yeah. All right. What about political leaders, engaging them? I'm told it worked wonders for you when you were in Minnesota. Is that true?
It is true. And the political leaders there became very interested in the problem when I requested samples from the backyards of all the political leaders, and I got a very large number of samples. And we gave the results back to people, and they discovered that they had the same kind of problem in their backyards as we had already discovered within the backyards of the people of their constituents within the same neighborhoods across the cities. And that really raised the attention of the politicians, and they became solidly for doing things like putting 2 cents per gallon of taxes on gasoline, because that was such a large source of the dust. But they were never able to carry it out to fruition. They were always blocked by outside lobbyists. And that's when they finally decided they had to petition Congress. It turns out that no state or city or any municipality of any kind was allowed to tamper with what was in gasoline. And that really meant an outright ban of the use of lead in gasoline. And that required either congressional action or EPA action. And the politicians of Minnesota were very active in putting together a petition that allowed a hearing to take place so that we could make our case at.
I'll be doggone. You've tried this in New Orleans, right?
Yes, and the mayor and the people in the at the health department are very interested in playgrounds are getting changed right now. They've just done the 12th playground. But there are about 100 playgrounds, maybe 50 of them have too high a lead content. So we've got a lot of work to do. And again, the city of New Orleans has a great deal of difficulty in finding money to do the projects. I have enormous difficulty finding funds to actually do the child care centers. Child care centers are private properties. They're not public properties. So the public is taking care of some public properties, but the residential properties and the private properties are not being dealt with.
It's a big job that you're trying to tackle there. Are you doing this by yourself, or do you have a good staff of people there that can help out at the Tulane School of Medicine?
I have a small group of subcontractors that work with me. And then we have a contracting firm that does most of the work, bringing in the soil, doing the work on the properties. So it's a small team right now, and we're running out of money in funding as of now. We finished up the projects for a grant that I have from HUD, and we're trying to move beyond that to do more properties. There's increasing demand or requests, and we don't have the funds to meet those requests right now.
Well, you're not alone. So many people are looking for money.
I know. Everybody is.
And yeah.
So, but when you think of the amount of money that the costs of lead poisoning, it's horrendous. It's not a, you know, this is a non-infectious disease. This is a kind of disease that it's chronic. It affects virtually every system of the body. And lead poisoning during childhood results in behavioral problems, learning disabilities, and later on in life, violence, and then a whole series of cardiovascular problems, high blood pressure, kidney disease, and even into diabetes. All of these are recognized as associated with lead poisoning early on in life. This is costing us a fortune to take care of. We're talking about billions of dollars that are going into trying to treat chronic diseases later on in life, when if we prevented the exposure early on in life, this could make a big difference in our population.
Well, that is very disturbing indeed. On the other hand, if the interventions are successful, is there fear that the lead could come back again?
Well, we have to do larger areas. That is a fear, yes. But the think in terms of the amount of lead that's in the soil when we finish the intervention. It's 5 parts per million. The neighboring properties might have 500 to 1,000 parts per million. And if we could get a number of properties on a neighborhood basis, it's really, we have to figure out how to do community interventions. It's possible as can be. We've watched, there are two hospital sites side by side being developed in the city of New Orleans. And during the period of development, they brought in clean soil. It was one of the most contaminated areas of the city. They ended up bringing in 11 feet of soil over 70 acres of land. It was a huge task. It was thousands of truckloads of soil being brought in. It was enough soil to basically cover over the most contaminated areas of the city of New Orleans. And that was just on this one project. So we know it's possible to move that the amount of soil around that's necessary to actually change the map of the city, change the environment, to make it a safer environment, especially for children.
You just made a reference to map of the city. I know you did that in New Orleans, but you've been mapping various cities for lead exposure. What other cities have you done that in?
Started in Baltimore. We started that in mid-1970s. I moved to Minneapolis, or actually I moved to St. Paul, but I did Minneapolis and St. Paul in the late 70s, early 1980s. I did a project with a MD who is working with the children who are being brought in from Vietnam, the Hmong children.
Mm-hmm.
And the Hmong population came in. They actually measured their blood lead levels when they arrived in the Twin Cities. And then they were settled into houses in the inner city. They remeasured and they discovered that they went from basically unmeasurable amounts of lead in the blood to lead poisoned in a very short period of time. It was extremely upsetting to the pediatrician I was working with. So we spent some time working with the Hmong children, and as part of that, we mapped the cities of both Minneapolis and St. Paul. And then I started mapping small cities, St. Cloud, Duluth, Rochester, Minnesota, to get an idea of whether the city size had anything to do with the amount of lead you found in the city. We found out it did. And that was a very important part of finally nailing down the recognition that lead had accumulated from the use of millions of tons of lead in gasoline.
Wow. Wow, wow, wow. Well, obviously it's better now than it would have been had lead not been removed from gasoline. So
yes, it is. And blood lead has been going down slowly. Part of that is because the populations have been moving out of the city and rebuilding. Part of it is landscaping being done. Many people are aware, and they're taking care of their children. But many people are not aware. And unfortunately, we still have a very large population of children that are being excessively exposed.
You know, you made the reference to gasoline. Is Europe, I mean, like, I don't know. Do they have unleaded gasolines?
They do now.
After we
took lead out of gasoline, the Europeans put removing lead from gasoline on at the fast track. The UN basically set up policies to have lead removed from all gasoline. We still have lead in some gasoline in the United States. The leaded gasoline is being used as aviation fuel, and that doesn't have to be. We don't have to have lead in aviation fuel, but right now there's still, unfortunately, a very large amount of lead still being used in aviation fuel. So cities like Vero Beach are cities that are being impacted by the training schools that they have at Vero Beach, where planes are taking off and landing all the time. And it's really one of the gaps we still have. where
that
lead
goes
is.
For jet fuel too for the commercial.
It isn't
airplane?
In jet fuel. It's only in piston plane fuel. And you think, well, that's just a small amount. It's not. It's thousands of. Let's see. I'm thinking in terms of thousands of pounds, but it comes out to many tons.
Right.
I think that they came up with something like, I should know those numbers, 2,000 tons or in fuels. And you have to appreciate what that means in science. I mean, we're concerned about children being exposed to 6 micrograms of lead. Now, most people would probably go to sleep at this point if they're listening to this. So I have to try to figure out how to illustrate that. The little packets of sugar, the unsweetened materials come in 1 gram packages, sweet and low, all of those packets.
Right.
If you look at it, it's 1 gram. 6 micrograms, which is what we're concerned about on a daily exposure of a child, is 6 millionths of what's in that packet.
Holy
so
nice.
If you open the packet and you throw it around the room, it's yeah. only 6 millionths of that. That is actually what we're concerned about in terms of exposure on a daily basis.
So it's a small.
Extremely small.
Yeah.
You wouldn't see it. And unfortunately, when we were using lead in gasoline, we'd have every gallon of gasoline had 2 grams in it. And you think of a car back in the 1960s, 25 gallons was very common. So that'd be 50 grams per car. And you see all the cars on the street, you can start appreciating why this is such a big problem. 10 cars would be 500 grams, and that'd be over a pound of lead and billions of micrograms at that point.
Well, that's pretty interesting. What is the best resource for parents who might be listening to educate themselves on this subject of lead poisoning? Is there anything you can recommend?
Well, there are some very good materials. I mean, EPA has materials, especially in the household environment. And CDC has good materials. If just going to a website and looking up lead poisoning or preventing lead poisoning, you'll find a number of materials. But the tendency is of the federal materials is to focus on the home environment, not to focus on the play environments outside the home. And that's a big gap right now. There's a lack of appreciation as to how much lead is really being found on the surface of the soil. I've developed a tool in which it's like a hand that you put down on the surface of the soil. And on soil that contains 400 parts per million, the amount of lead that's found in the hand is 1,500 micrograms per square foot, essentially. And 1,500 micrograms per square foot, again, this is going to put people to sleep, but that compares to what is the guideline for the interior of 40 micrograms per square foot. So you have 1,500 micrograms on a soil that's supposedly safe outside, and inside, we have guidelines to prevent children from being in homes that have 40 micrograms per square foot.
Wow. Well, Dr. Melky, this has been pretty fascinating. I mean, you know, your facts and figures are amazing, to say the least. Unfortunately, we run out of time. We've gone through a half hour just like that. It's kind of fascinating hearing all of this information from you. It's kind of disturbing. And I know it has awakened a lot of people who are concerned about this. So I thank you for taking the time to be with us. I hope you have a great day. Our guest has been Dr. Howard Melky. He's with the Department of Pharmacology at Tulane University School of Medicine in New Orleans. Doctor, thank you for being with us. I really appreciate it.
Thank you very much.
You are more than welcome, sir. And that'll wrap it up for this session of Close Up Talk Radio. Our guest again, Dr. Howard Melky. We invite you to join us for the next session of Close Up Talk Radio. You never know who we'll have with us, but there'll be some fascinating guest, that's for sure. For now, I'm Doug Llewellyn, thanking you so much for being with us. See you next time, right here on Close Up Talk Radio. Bye for now.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly, but then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here.
We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.